Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Ray Hager and I speak with Bill Payne, the Director and Dean of the College of Ag, Biotech, and Natural Resources. Plus on the Power Pundit panel, Lisa Cafferata, Andy McKay, and Jesse Gutierrez. All coming up next on All New Nevada Newsmakers.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shad, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're pleased to welcome to the program for the first time Bill Payne. He's the Dean and Director of the College of Ag, Biotech, and Natural Resources at UNR. Pleasure to have you on the program, sir.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, it's funny because a lot of times agriculture doesn't get the recognition it deserves in Nevada, but it's actually our third biggest industry, correct?
I couldn't agree more. It's not sufficiently appreciated in the state. It contributes about $4.5 billion to the economy.
$4.5 billion.
Yes, that's a study that's been put out by the Nevada Department of Agriculture. And as you mentioned, it's the third largest industry. But the point that I've made is that it's also relevant to a very large portion of the planet we live on. About 40% of the Earth's land surface looks like Nevada, and most of the world's poor live in portions of the Earth that look like Nevada. And I've always felt that we could be a leader in finding ways to sustainably produce food on this planet, and it would benefit billions of people.
And I don't think I've ever heard anybody describe it like that. I mean, we've talked about it in terms of astronaut training, military training, but never in terms of helping to feed the world's poor.
It's absolutely the case. And not only feed the world's poor, but feed it sustainably, while dealing with many of the same issues that we're dealing with in Nevada, such as trying to protect the environment, habitat for animals. Much of the dry world, if you will, is also dealing with the same sort of hyper-urbanization that we see in Nevada. So in many, many themes, including nutrition, employment of youth, etc., other portions of the world all deal with the same issues that we are. And I mentioned the poor parts of the world, which is absolutely the case, but even some very, very rich parts of the world, including Qatar, where I've worked a fair amount. This is the richest country in the world per capita, but they still are struggling with the same issues that we are.
And also, you've got a huge background in Africa, correct?
In Africa and other parts of the world. But, I mean, I started out in Peace Corps riding a camel from oasis to oasis many, many years ago. And I've been either blessed or cursed to spend most of my professional career in dry parts of the world, including in Southern Asia, in the Middle East, parts of South Africa, etc.
One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, because it's obviously become very relevant in the last few weeks, is the status of drought conditions in Nevada. It seems like we've really had a miracle 2016-2017 so far.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. We've gone from, five consecutive years of drought with much of the state under drought conditions to suddenly, for the first time in years, we're in a very positive situation. Now, there were some scary moments, at least for us, with the potential for flooding, and we had to evacuate animals from our main station farm and all that. But yeah, absolutely, it's been a very good winter so far.
Bill, when you look at crops that are grown in Nevada, some people have told me in the past that, say, for example, onions are not a good crop to be grown in Nevada. And, of course, huge onion farms out in Mason Valley, they take too much water. What is your take on crops that perhaps should be grown in Nevada because of our issue with water, and maybe some that should not?
Well, it's somewhat of a complicated issue. Worldwide, we use about 80 to 85% of our fresh water for agriculture, and that's about the same amount that we use in Nevada. It's difficult to tell somebody who's trying to eke out a living that they shouldn't grow a crop that is paying the bills and they should grow something else. Having said that, we are in the college now. We're looking for ways to use water much more efficiently, whether it's through more efficient irrigation systems or to select or produce, if you will, more water-efficient crops. And we're doing that for anything from horticultural crops, such as onion. We'll be doing the same thing for forage crops, such as alfalfa. But also we'll be looking at alternative crops, such as teff and bioenergy crops.
You know, when you're talking about alternative crops, what about in the last session, a bill was brought up to help promote hemp growing in Nevada. Not, of course, you're not growing hemp for marijuana, right, but you're growing it because it is a it's a source of biofuel.
Fiber, right.
Fiber, paper. You can make paper. You can make clothing. What about the future of hemp growth in Nevada?
Well, I'm optimistic. We already have some horticultural researchers that are looking at hemp, and that one of whom is in Las Vegas. And now that we can legally study this crop, I think it's something worth looking. I like to point out that the first American flag was made out of hemp.
Really?
Yes.
When you say research, what kind of research?
So we now in the college have a suite of research that ranges from the very, very basic molecular biology, where we're looking at anything from transgenics.
Okay, what's transgenics?
In other words, we will take genes from one species and place them in another to obtain traits that the new species wouldn't otherwise have. Just one example, an exciting one, I think. We have one researcher that's trying to move the photosynthetic metabolisms that we have in cacti. So cacti are very drought tolerant, very water use efficient, to commercial crops. And if we can do that, it will completely change the food security situation on the planet.
In what way?
Well, cacti would use water anywhere from 5 to 10 more times efficiently than current crops, such as wheat and maize. And then the other thing is they open their stomates, they transpire at night. And that's when the vapor pressure deficit is much lower. In other words, relative humidity is much higher. And because of those two basic reasons, we would have much more water use efficient crops. And this is important because, as you know, we're supposed to find enough food to feed 2 billion more people on this planet by 2050. And we're expected to do so when we won't have nearly so much water for agriculture, because you've already seen the sort of competition we have for it now. And the quality of water will likely be much less than it is now. So we will have less water, a poorer quality, and we're supposed to feed 2 more billion people on this planet sustainably while respecting the environment. So we very much need these sorts of technologies.
All right, let's take a break. More with Dean Payne when we come back.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion, for romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Sully's Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have 279-inch high-def TVs, 1265-inch high-def TVs, including 2 party booths for your own private party, and 6 high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature build-your-own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big-screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, Ray Hager and I continue our conversation with Bill Payne. He's the Dean and Director of the College of Ag, Biotech, Natural Resources at UNR.
Bill, could you go over this? You were talking about cactus, and of course, you can't eat cactus. Can you explain to me how this is going to maybe revolutionize agriculture? I didn't understand it when you were
talking. Well, of course, you can eat cactus. It's a forage crop, and you will see if you go to a market down, you will see cactus for sale. So some people do consume it as well. But what we're trying to do, there are basically three types of photosynthetic mechanisms in plants. There's C3 plants, that's such as wheat, and then there's C4 plants, such as maize and sorghum, and then there's a third, which is called Krans-Lucian acid metabolism. And that's the one that's the sort of metabolism that exists in cacti. All right. And essentially, they open their stomates at night, and then they have a way of concentrating CO2 within their leaves such that carbon is fixed much more efficiently. And that's why cacti can grow in very harsh environments. We have a number of people working on that. One lab in particular is working on looking at Opuntia or other forms of cacti as both as a potential forage or a biofuel crop. But ultimately, we want to move that photosynthetic mechanism into agriculturally important crops, and that will allow us to grow food and fiber and feed much more efficiently in much harsher environments and with much poorer quality water, saline water in particular.
So you want to grow these other crops, corn, wheat, like you mentioned, with the metabolism of a cactus?
Yes.
How do you do that? It seems like it's
very complicated, and I would have to lay out a roadmap that you can probably find on our website if you look up John Cushman's lab. But rather than going into the complexities of it, let me just point out that there are some plants, orchids among them, for example, some orchids that can switch back and forth from one type of metabolism to the other. So we already have model plants. That we can strive to mimic.
Okay, I want to ask you about another drought-resistant plant. Now, a big bill that became law in the last legislature was about expanding the wine industry in northern Nevada. Supposedly, northern Nevada and southern Nevada is a great place to grow grapes for wine. I was just wondering, could I get your take on this? And do you see the potential that others see as like a multi-million dollar business?
I absolutely do. We have in the person of one Grant Kramer, who is also within the college, one of the world's leading experts on wine grapes. He just completed a sabbatical in Bordeaux, and he's well enough
tough
now.
Sabbatical.
Yes, tough sabbatical, but I mean that's the caliber of people we have within the college.
College of scientists, of course.
Yeah, and I don't think it's much of a secret that Bordeaux would love to steal him, but Grant has been a visionary, if you will, with regard to the wine industry, and he takes into account climate change. In other words, he believes that this area will be more wine friendly, wine grape friendly, if you will, with climate change, and he's been working on this for many years. And indeed, the wine industry is taking off, not only locally, but there are a number of companies from California that are starting looking at the region. Now, I like to remind people that we have a state mandate, particularly because I administer, if you will, the Nevada Agriculture Experiment Station. So that's a statewide agency, if you will. It has a statewide mandate. And so Grant is also looking at wine grapes growing in the southern part of the state where it's a completely different climate.
And of course, Pahrump has been hosting a winery there for many, many years.
But most of their grapes are imported. And Grant is convinced that we can grow them in that harsh climate. And he's looking at some, as I recall, he's looking at some vines from Italy.
Let me ask you this, because we've got about a minute left. You're talking about poor water quality as we move into the future. What about desalination as one answer? And is it possible when you have salinity within a state like Nevada to have some mini version of that to accommodate the water to be able to bring it up to a better quality?
Yes, it is. I think that the long and short of it is that it's still not economically feasible
right.
to do on a large enough scale to irrigate crops. Now there are people that are working with that, but I mean, I remember Qatar was trying to do this, and they were talking about investing $50 billion, and one can't help but wonder about the sustainability of that. So is it worth investing $50 billion to be able to grow crops that are not particularly expensive, such as wheat?
No, I was going to say it's interesting because it seems to me that, you know, if the need is there, people will pay the price for the water.
But we believe with some confidence that we can select for plants that can tolerate that saline water. And we have a number of international partners with whom we work towards the same goal, such as the International Center for Biosaline Agriculture, which is located in Dubai. Great people, and I've worked with them in the past. So we think that it's much more cost effective in the long run to select or engineer even plants such that they can use that saline water. And that's another advantage of the CAM metabolism I was referring to. They can grow in saline conditions.
All right, and that's where we got to leave it. Would you come back soon? Because you are a fascinating guy. This was a great show.
To.
Thank you so much for being here. Bill
Thanks
Payne,
for having me.
Dean of the College of Ag, Biotech, and Natural Resources.
Thanks
we'll
very
be
much.
Right back.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we have a great Power Pundit panel. As always, Elisa Cafferata is here with Planned Parenthood. Andy McKay is Executive Director of the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association. And Jesse Gutierrez is the former Executive Director of Nevada Hispanic Services.
You know, folks, I wanted to start out with Yucca Mountain, because it was in Governor Sandoval's State of the State address that Yucca Mountain is indeed dead, and some people were trying to see another way, maybe a research facility with Yucca Mountain using federal money, and we have a new administration coming in Washington, D.C., and they're still looking for a repository for nuclear waste. I'm just wondering if Yucca Mountain really is indeed dead. Elisa, what do you think about that?
Well, he didn't say Yucca Mountain is dead. He said he is dedicated to fighting it with every resource at his disposal, and it's really not up to the governor. It's largely up to the Congress and the federal agencies. So he was just, I think, throwing down the gauntlet and saying, we're not changing our approach in the state.
See, I don't know how you keep that approach going when you lose Harry Reid, who had a lot of juice in keeping Yucca Mountain proponents backed off.
I have mixed feelings about this whole thing with Yucca Mountain. Is this an opportunity and a challenge, or as a detriment to what Nevada is all about and the history? So it depends on how it gets worked. It depends upon how, whether jobs are going to continue to be made there, whether there's going to be safe deposits of nuclear material. Nobody has ever come back and said yes or no on all this, and there's an economical advantage for that to happen for Nevada, and then there's the danger of things happening in Nevada. No balance. So whoever thinks that can prove their point better, I think I'd be willing to move accordingly.
And at the same time, we look at Tonopah that doesn't have hospital services because their economy is so bad. And they would love to have Yucca Mountain. Let's change the topic. Andy, I wanted to ask you, we've been talking about the marijuana tax, the governor's imposed another 10%. How does this play into the three-tier system? Do you think it's going to get taxed at every level, or how's that going to work?
Well, I think that's exactly what's going to happen. In terms of when you look at it, the structure of the ballot question, and frankly, we have an infrastructure in place already through medical marijuana, and I could see it being exactly like a 3-tier system. Are you going to be able to buy?
It's going
to
be a 3-tier system. Yeah. The recreational, not the medical, but the recreational already.
Correct.
Is.
Are you going to be able to buy marijuana in 7-Eleven? No, I don't see that. It's going to be highly regulated. But certainly it's. I think what you see in terms of alcohol today, recreational marijuana, it's going to be identical. And whenever tax gets this regulatory structure figured out, probably shortly after the session, they requested it, what, $900,000 to implement it. They got the money, and so they're already moving forward.
And I'm sort of fascinated by the shock at the tax level for, the retail distribution, because when you look at cigarettes, we tax them at every turn, and we tax them at, a couple 100% of above and beyond what the manufacturer pays. So this is the price of introducing a sin product, is you get a sin tax, and it goes into the helping make the state be able to deal with whatever the issues that arise from recreational use of marijuana.
And Jesse, Ray brought this up earlier, which is that, at this high of a tax rate, aren't you opening up the market to more illegality?
I was concerned about that. Yes, I'm thinking that that's a very strong possibility, that more people are going to want to go using the underground type rather than the legal purchases.
Elisa, one thing I want to ask you about was Medicaid funding. We've got about 30 seconds left here. But how that all plays into this budget.
Yeah, it's a huge concern if part of the repeal of the Affordable Care Act is lost of the Medicaid expansion or Medicaid dollars. Nevada is looking at possibly losing $1 billion in Medicaid support, and 370,000 Nevadans losing their insurance. So, again, because we just don't know what's going to happen, I think the governor was wise not to cover it. But there's a lot of predictions that that will be the special session this time, is dealing with health care.
Andy, you agree?
Oh, I think that there's a good chance. Conversely, there was a publication that indicated, well, if you go back and in the form of block grants, Nevada actually could reap the spoil, so to speak.
Depends on the assumption and the formula.
Correct. The reality is
that's the title of my new book, by the way. The Assumption and the Formula. And that's where we got to leave it. Thank you all very much. We'll be right back.
Your business workers' comp company should be your partner. The Pro Group customer care team brings you effective risk management training, support, and web tools at no extra cost to you. We maximize the safety of your employees and business every day. Pro Group is with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with information and resources at your fingertips. We ensure your employees' safety and that your premium's in line. When you're a Pro Group member, you have the team that's looking out for you. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you. Call for a no-obligation quote today.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
On our next broadcast, Paul Enos, CEO of the Nevada Trucking Association. Join us then.